Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and it is a pleasure to be with you today. And I wish you a good day wherever you are. I'm pretty excited about my episode today because my smart person today is Wayne Mullins. Wayne is a husband, a father of four, an entrepreneur, an author, and the founder and CEO of Ugly Mug Marketing, which I love the name of. He is a risk taker who thinks outside the box. And Wayne, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much, Rob. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Absolutely. All right. So let me just, I'm going to start here. Ugly Mug Marketing. Where did you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's an interesting name. It's a name that certainly evokes emotion on other people when they hear that name. The name actually comes from a gentleman of the name David Ogilvie. David Ogilvie was an advertiser born and raised over in Ireland. He ends up coming to America back in the 50s, and the rumor is he lands in New York with $40 in his pocket and says he's going to build an ad agency. And lo and behold, 10 or 15 years later, he had built the world's largest ad agency, Ogilvie & Mather. To this day, they're still in the top 10 in terms of size. And he was famous, or supposedly famous, for this saying that he would go around the offices saying, which is, I would rather an ad that's ugly but effective than one that's beautiful that isn't. And so it's really just a play on that whole mentality that, you know, at the end of the day, our job is to deliver results for our clients, not get wrapped up in trying to win design awards or be the most quote unquote creative, et cetera. So that's where it comes from.
Okay. It's interesting that you say it, because sometimes I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but ugly stands out sometimes. Okay. And I'll tell you a quick story. I remember there was a family that had a litter of puppies, and they had put the advertisement in the newspaper that there were puppies for sale. And there were 8 of them, 7 cute, 1 ugly. And when folks would show up and they'd be like, well, which one is the ugly one? And they said, well, can't you tell? And of course, everyone wanted to pick out the ugly. And by the end of the entire process, they had sold off or adopted off 8 ugly puppies because everyone wanted to pick the ugly puppy because that was the one that appealed it. And to your point, it's not about beauty. It's about effectiveness. It's about what actually works. I love it. So you're modeling this on a phrase that you've learned from somebody else. I'm assuming that it's basically, as you're doing this, it's a learning process. Can you talk to me about the kind of the learning process for you as to how you're developing your business?
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. So, you know, for me, you know, kind of rewinding the story a bit, my junior year of college, when I was in school, for whatever reason, my parents decided to give me some CDs by this gentleman of the name Zig Ziglar. And I don't know why they did this. I need to ask them, like, what led to this idea. But they gave me these CDs, and the CDs were on selling. So it was one of Zig Ziglar's trainings on how to be a salesman, how to sell better. And I don't remember the specifics, but what I can tell you is that Zig sold me on the profession of selling. And the other thing he sold me on was what he used to call Automobile University. And that was simply this, that anytime you got in your vehicle, you should be quote unquote enrolled in school, right? You should have some form of, back then it was cassette tapes or CDs playing, learning. And he just talked about how, you know, the average commute in America was X number of minutes, and how if you listen to something educational, something motivational during that commute every day, in the equivalent of just a few short years, you would have the same amount of classroom time as somebody who went to a four-year university. And so that really, for me, began this kind of passion and this pursuit of always trying to learn, always trying to grow, and always trying to develop.
Okay. And obviously, this show fits right in with what you're doing, because to me, I'm on a lifelong quest to learn. And my professional understanding is that everyone out there knows more about something than I do. And to me, it's a very it's a very convenient and self-serving way. I get to bring experts in here and I interview them about what they know and I benefit from it. And not only do I benefit from it, but my audience benefits from it as well. So you're talking about being on a learning curve. So Zig was kind of ahead of the curve with this because he's releasing CDs, he's releasing, you know, cassettes. And nowadays we've got people that are releasing podcasts that are basically the same concept. Are there some podcasts that you listen to these days that you say, okay, you know, I was learning from Zig, now these are the people that I'm learning from?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for me, Rob, one of the things that's super fascinating about my story is this. I graduated from high school and from college having never read an entire book in my life. I was one of those studious people who didn't study, who showed up for the test. I would buy the Cliff Note versions of every single book. I would do the least amount as possible to get by. Now, I graduated from high school with a B average, from college with high C, B average. I don't remember where it was. But for me, what I developed as a result of listening to Zig Ziglar was that for me personally, I learn better when I read. My brain is like very much, you know, jump from thing to thing to thing. It's hard for me to stay focused. And so when I listen to things, although I do, and I'll give you some names of podcasts, when I listen to things, my brain jumps around a lot. And so it's tough for me to stay focused and to actively learn. Whereas when I force myself to read, and it took me years and years, and still to this day, it's still a challenging thing for me. But when I read it, it forces me to stay in the page, right? It forces me to pay attention to what's in front of me because the act of reading is much more, for me, engaging than listening. Now, that's the long answer to say that everyone's different, right? Everyone learns differently. And so what I would challenge or encourage your listeners to do is do what works best for them, right? So I do a combination. Some podcasts that I do listen to, I listen to Lead to Win by Michael and Megan Hyatt. That's one that I listen to on a regular basis. I listen to The One Thing podcast. I believe that's Jeff Wood is the host of that show. Trying to think through the list in my head. There's a list of them that I go through on a fairly regular basis.
Sure. Well, hopefully learning from smart people is one that will be added to the list and, you know, we can go from there. But let me just highlight something that you said, and that is you've got to figure out your way to learn. Okay. So yeah, for you, there is Automobile University and you can, when you're in the car, you can listen to podcasts and you can do that. There are books, you can read books. Some people are visual learners. And so there's YouTube and there's all types of online courses that are available that way. And ultimately, the quest is figure out what is your best mode of, data input. To be completely nerdy about it, what is the best way at which you assimilate information, and then use that, and maybe it's a couple different ones, a couple different ways to do that. Do you have some tips on how people can be maybe more consistent and more deliberate in the way that they do learning? Because so many times it's, you binge watch or binge listen to a podcast and then you drop it for a while and then you come back. And can you give us some tips maybe on consistency with that?
Yeah, absolutely. The very first thing I would say is that, you know, oftentimes I think people look at like a book or a podcast or an audio book or, you know, a series on YouTube and they think, you know, it's a huge commitment, right? So if you sit down to read a book, it's a huge commitment to get through a 200-page book. And where I believe it's important to start is what I simply call a page a day, right? Sit down, make the commitment that you're going to read one page a day. Nothing more, nothing less, one page a day. That's all that's required. And so, you know, it's in developing those little things that are so easy to do that you begin to build on top of that. So it's kind of like a snowball going down a mountain, right? If we can train ourselves to read one page a day, two pages becomes easy, three pages becomes easy, right? And so what I believe to be true is that consistency creates miracles. But the problem is we try to jump too far ahead, right? We set a goal, for example, at the beginning of the year, we're going to read 20 books this year. having read none or one last year. And so what happens is this seems like an insurmountable goal in the back of our minds. Yes, we desire to do it. We want to do it. We long to do that thing, 20 books a year, whatever it is. But we set ourselves up for failure. And so I believe in creating these really small micro goals. And what I would say is, you know, it's really about a habit goal. It's a goal to build a habit. And that's where I would start. Very simple, small step.
Okay. And in doing that, okay, I'm hearing you read one page a day. Okay. But when you read one page a day, in some ways, it almost becomes impossible just to read one page, doesn't it? Because you read one page and the paragraph flows onto the next page. And so you start into the next page, and the next thing you know, you're halfway through or the whole way through the next page. And you find that as you are doing this, you're actually, because you've set such, I don't want to say small goals, but because you've set such achievable goals that you're able to perform more than you have committed to. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where it starts. I think all too often we set that upper end so high, right? It sounds good. It feels good to read that X number of books, whatever it may be. And when we, on the other hand, say we're going to read one page a day, in some ways, it feels like we're cheating ourselves. You're like, we're setting the bar too low. But what I've discovered in my life is that it's better to set that bar too low and build on top of that, right? It's like a high jumper going to jump the high jump. The first time you go out to learn to high jump, they're not going to set the bar at 19 feet. They're going to set it down low. They're going to get you comfortable going over the bar. They're going to get you comfortable with the movements, with the flow. And in our lives, what I believe happens is the things that are easy to do are also the things that are easy not to do. And so it's easy to read, right? It's not complicated. It's not difficult to say, I'm going to read a book tomorrow or start reading a book tomorrow. But because it's easy to do, it's also easy to say, well, this happened today or that happened today. And so I'll start tomorrow. And we know the old saying that tomorrow never gets here, right?
Right.
It's always a day in the future.
Yeah. I mean, there's the story about, I think it's Joe's Crab Shack. They have a big sign on the wall that says free crabs tomorrow. When you come every day, you're getting the sign that says they're free tomorrow. I think that though, just, I want to highlight one of the things that you said, and that is because there are such simple things, they're easy to not do it. And I think we double up on things. You know, say, okay, my reading one page a day, I didn't read one today, but I'll read two tomorrow. And two tomorrow becomes three, four, five. And the next thing you know, you've got to read a couple chapters to catch up because you're, and now it's not those easily achievable micro goals, I think is what you called them. Now it becomes a much more difficult, broader task. And do you have a time that you set aside for this and you say, okay, I'm going to read my one page a day and I'm going to do it first thing when I get up in the morning, or I'm going to do it over lunch, or are there some strategies that you have that would be able to help achieve those micro goals?
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. So for me, I'm married, got four kids. My oldest is 14. My youngest is 7. And so for me to carve out that time to read, it had to be first thing in the morning and it had to be before the kids got up. For people listening, they may hear that and think, oh, that's great. You're a morning person. I'm not. I'm a night owl. And the truth is, I was a night owl as well. I was a night owl until I decided that I was going to become a morning person. So every single morning I get up 7 days a week at 5:05 a.m. And that begins my morning ritual. You know, usually my kids aren't getting out of bed till around 7. And so that gives me a 2-hour window where I walk through my morning ritual. And, you know, I'll just briefly kind of share what my morning ritual looks like.
Sure.
So I get up, I go make a cup of coffee, I come back, I meditate. I then spend about 30 minutes, give or take, in reading time. I then exercise, and that exercise period, I've expanded it a bit longer now. It's now in total about an hour. So I do just some basic push-ups, some sit-ups, and then I run. I run for, you know, 4 miles and then come back and get ready for work and all of that. And, you know, the important thing about that is for me, because I'm not naturally a morning person. I've had this ritual, this routine now for probably about 3 years, maybe 4 years, something like that. But the important thing for me was to do it on a consistent basis. So whenever I decided to do this, initially I decided I was going to get up at 5 o'clock Monday through Friday, and then the weekends would go back to normal. And what I discovered was it was so incredibly difficult to shift back after a weekend into that early morning routine and ritual that I would miss. I would make an excuse on Monday. You know, I was up late on Sunday, or I slept in too long on Sunday, so I wasn't tired, couldn't go to bed, whatever it may be. So then Monday I would have an excuse. Well, then Tuesday would roll around and I was still exhausted from, you know, the day before, and another excuse. And so what I finally said, I said, you know what, I'm going to commit to do this, and it's going to be a 7 day a week commitment for 30 days. I'm going to try it for 30 days and see if keeping this consistent routine for 30 days makes a difference. In other words, I don't have these vast fluctuations between, you know, getting up early and then staying up late on the weekends and struggling to get up early. So for me, that's how it began. And now, you know, 7 days a week, almost 365 days a year, it's consistent. The only time I cheat on that is usually on vacation.
Right. Okay. So I hear this kind of like, and I live in a world of analogies, so my apologies for that, but it's kind of like a diet, right? Where if you're on a diet, it has to be a lifestyle change. It can't just be a temporary thing. It can't just be, you know, something in which you're on a diet 5 days a week and then the weekends are cheat days or whatever that is. It has to become something that is consistent and something that is done, and you do it every day, and it's not, it just becomes part of the routine, and in that you reap the benefits. And I'm assuming that you're getting, that you're seeing not just, you know, learning benefits, but you're seeing health benefits and lifestyle benefits as well from just having a consistent routine that you're going through 7 days a week.
Yeah, absolutely. To tell you the profound impact this morning ritual has had on my life, like there's no words I can use to explain it. Part of that is because, you know, when we think about transformation, we often look at other people and we're like, they magically transform. Somehow they go from X to Y and it's this magical transformation. But what we don't see is the day in, day out things that they did to undergo, to make that transformation take place. And the same thing's true in my life and the lives of anybody else that kind of goes through this process or through any transformational process, is the transformations take place in the daily disciplines. The transformations take place when we are consistent. And I'll always say consistency creates miracles. It doesn't matter if that's in your relationships. It doesn't matter if it's in, you know, work, personal, physical, whatever the area is, consistency will create those miracles.
One of the things that when we talk about miracles, a lot of times we view a miracle as being something that kind of happens instantaneously, right? So from a Bible perspective, you have, you know, Lazarus is dead, Jesus performs a miracle, and now Lazarus is alive. But I'm assuming that the miracles that you're talking about are things that take place over time, or are they immediate?
Yeah, they're progressional, right? So it's over time that these miracles transpire or look and feel completely different. I often use the analogy. You said you love analogies, Rob, so I'm going to throw one back at you.
Wonderful.
It's this. I use the analogy of the difference between a windshield and a rearview mirror. So when we're in the midst of making these transitions, when we're in the midst of, quote unquote, these miracles, we're looking through the windshield. And the thing that's interesting about looking through the windshield is that the windshield is often dirty. There's often bugs splattered all over the windshield. It's often kind of blurry because we're moving forward. We're hitting potholes. There's dust. There's debris. There's all these things coming at us through the windshield. But when we look up and we look in the rearview mirror is always clean, right? There's no bugs splattered on it. There's no grime. And so when we look back in the rearview mirror of our lives, it's often clear how we ended up where we are. But when we're in the midst of pushing forward through that, we can't see the transformation that is taking place.
Yeah, that makes it makes so much sense what you're saying. And when we're on a journey, so many times we don't realize where we are because we've been driving for a while, right? And so, like you said, you can see what's ahead of you, but it's not until you realize like the distance that you've traveled, what you've come from, where you were, that it helps you to appreciate where you have come to. It makes great sense. So thank you. Thank you for joining me in analogy world.
So you bet.
There were in the show notes that I was looking at, there were three words that you use, and I'd like to get you to kind of talk about these three words. You talk about framework, strategy, and tactic. Can you kind of tell me what do those words mean? What are how are they different, and how do they apply for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't help it, but another analogy for you, Rob. So the analogy is this. When I think about those three terms, so framework, strategy, and a tactic, you know, in our lives and in business, particularly in the business world, we often use those words kind of interchangeably. And those words are drastically different in meaning. So the analogy is this. If you think about a train and a place or places that train's going to go, the framework would actually be the tracks, right? The tracks are determining, the framework is going to determine where you're going to end up. So we want to build our businesses. We want to build our lives on the right frameworks, right? The frameworks that are going to take us to where we want to go. Now, the strategies would be the type of locomotive or the type of train that sits on those tracks. So depending on where we want to go and what we want to accomplish, that train could be different. So if we're pulling a heavy load, we need a big diesel train to pull that heavy load. If we're pulling passengers, we need a different train. If we're in Japan and it's the bullet train because the speed matters, that's a different train. Now, the tactics are the way that the train gets managed and operated. So the tracks determine where we're going, right? We have to have that framework right first. Then we choose the locomotive or the actual engine that's going to sit on those tracks based on what we're trying to accomplish. And then finally, the tactics would be how do we actually operate? How do we manage this train that we've put on these tracks? And where I think most people make the biggest mistakes is, you know, we live in a world where there are influencers, you know, social media influencers, people espousing all these tactics. You know, here's the way I grew my Instagram following, or here's the way I did this, or the way I did that. And what we overlook would be what was the underlying strategy, but more specifically, what frameworks did they build on top of? Because if we don't have that right, the other two components, the strategy and the tactics, don't matter at all.
It makes a lot of sense, and not just because it's a great analogy. Wayne, we've gotten this far in our conversation, and we haven't even talked about marketing yet. So tell me all of the things that you're learning. Are when you're doing your reading in the morning, that's part of your routine, is that lifestyle reading? Is that marketing reading? Is that business reading? What kind of reading is it that you're doing?
Yeah, great question. So for me, I now call it seasonal reading. And what I mean by that is I read based on whatever season I currently find myself in. So that find myself in could be in my, you know, my family life, the season I'm in with my wife, with my kids. It could be the season I'm in work. It could be the season I'm in my personal life, on my, you know, my personal journey. You know, what I would say is I don't read fiction, nothing against fiction, but I don't read fiction. You know, so everything that I'm reading is in some way, some shape, some form, designed to help me in that situation that I currently find myself in. So, you know, right now I'm reading a book, that's more of, I guess you could call it a self-help related book. Another one I just finished was kind of in that same genre as well. It was called Effortless by Greg McKeown. So yeah, it's going to vary based on the season.
Okay. So let me just, there's got to be a certain degree of self-awareness there then to say, okay, where am I and what is it? What is the area that I need to focus on and the area that I need to develop, whether it's where you have been currently reading, which is developing yourself, or developing your relationship with your wife, your kids, or developing your business. You've got to have some self-awareness there to say, okay, what is it that I want to do? And I think that kind of goes back to the framework, right? In which it's, where do I want to go? And once you kind of know where you want to go, that's what's going to be the driver that kind of moves you forward and determines what you're learning about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And the way I look at it is this, Rob. I look at it and say, okay, who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be in my relationship with my wife? Who do I want to be as a father to my kids? Who do I want to be as a quote unquote boss at the office? Who do I want to be towards my clients? And then I use that to help shape and sculpt the direction I need to head. So I don't look at it and say, okay, here's what I want. Here's what I desire. Here's, you know, me. I look at it and say, who do I want to be? What does that person actually look like? And so once I determine what that person looks like, I then look for the attributes. What are the attributes of that person? In other words, a great husband, for example. What are the attributes of a great husband? Now, I could give you a list, but my wife would probably give you a slightly different list, right? And, you know, in our lives, in our relationships, I think one of the things that's so important is that we are often very unaware, right? We don't know what we don't know. And so I could sit here and tell you, Rob, that Heather and I have a great relationship. Our marriage is, you know, going well, everything's wonderful, and I'm being an excellent husband. But the truth is, she's the one who has the better insight to how I'm showing up as a husband, right?
Sure.
And the same with my kids, right? I could sit here and tell you that, you know, things are going great with my kids. I'm being a fabulous dad to my kids, but they may show up with a different answer to that. And so I think it's important that, you know, in our lives, that we're willing to have those conversations, the conversations that say, where am I not living up to what I could be living up to, right? Mm-hmm. Where am I out of line with where I want to head, where we want to head? And I think that, you know, often we allow, I know this has been true for me, we allow our ego to get in the way of that. So we begin thinking that way. And then our ego says, but they don't see all the stuff you're doing. They don't see all the stuff you're dealing with, right? So we begin excusing the fact that I didn't help with the dishes last night, or the fact that, you know, my kid wanted to go out and play Frisbee or football or whatever, and I chose to sit and scroll on my phone. And so I think it's, you know, in leaning into that and learning to let go of our ego.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's very valuable in terms of the fact that when you are in a relationship, there's two sides to it, and it's about understanding what the other person needs and what the other person, you know, their perspective on what you're doing also. Listen, Wayne, this has been a fascinating conversation. If folks are looking to find out more about you and about Ugly Mug Marketing, where can they find you?
Yeah, the easiest place is just on our website. It's just uglymugmarketing.com. You know, there's links to our social channels. There's my email address, phone numbers, all that kind of stuff right there on the website.
Fantastic. I encourage folks, go check that out and make a connection there and see if there's some way that, you know, you can work together, if there's something that Wayne can do for you when it comes to your marketing. Wayne, this is, like I said, it's been very interesting. It's time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this, my friend?
I'm ready, Rob. Let's do it.
So if you were the ruler of your own country, what would be the first law that you would enact?
Yeah, the first law that I would enact, Rob, is I would go with kind of the conversation we were just having, which is this, that everyone's performance, everyone's you know, score, so to speak, would be determined by those around them and those they impact. So in other words, we would be accountable to those around us. So our family would give us a score, our work would give us a score, and we would have to receive that score, right? So we would have to begin making decisions off of that score in our lives.
Wow. A very, very deep answer. I love it. Is there a song, and maybe you're not a song person, but is there a song that you would say that sums up your life, or is that, or a song that you identify with that relates to you in your life?
Yeah. So two things come to mind. One of them is a song by a group called 21 Pilots. And the song is actually called Car Radio. And basically the theme of the song is this, that someone stole the car radio out of the car. And now you have to sit in silence, but the thoughts in your head are so loud that, you know, you don't want to hear those thoughts anymore. We want to drown out those thoughts. And so that song for me just reminds me that, we need to get comfortable in stillness. We need to get comfortable in silence. We need to learn to listen and hear the thoughts that are happening in our heads, but not necessarily take action or not even necessarily believe every single thought that we think. So that's one of them. And then the other one that comes to mind, and I'm terrible with the name of this song. You'll have to help me here. It's the song, I think, from the maybe late 60s, early 70s. It's the song that basically says, I want to grow up and be just like you, Dad.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know the name of it. Is that the Cat in the Cradle?
That's it. Yep. Yeah. So that song, you know, for me is just a constant reminder of, you know, we live in a busy time. We live in a busy society. There's always something vying for our attention, for my attention. And, you know, our kids are learning more so from what we do than what we say. And so I want to live in such a way that my actions speak louder than my words. So that's another one.
All right. I love it. All right. Last question. You're in Louisiana, and the question is this: shrimp. Is shrimp like nectar of the gods, or are they the garbage men of the ocean?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I get myself in trouble for answering it, but I love shrimp. I love bold shrimp. So I think that, you know, if you're not from the South, you're not from Louisiana, you've probably never had shrimp the way that they're prepared or cooked here, seasoned, right? The way they're boiled here. And so what I would say is if you don't like bold shrimp, it's probably because you've never had them here.
An excellent answer, a great way to close out the show to say, hey, not only this, Wayne is apparently on the Louisiana Tourism Board, which says you've got to come down here and have what we have because you can't get it anywhere else. Wayne Mullins, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it. To all my listeners, thank you for being with us today. I hope that you've enjoyed this as much as I have. And I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.